I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Don't know if you've had a chance to see the National Geographic cover story. It's the war on science. Climate change does not exist. Evolution never happened. The moon landing was fake. Vaccinations can lead to autism. Genetically modified food is evil. The article is written by our guest this hour. The age of disbelief, skepticism about science on the rise, and polarization is the order of the day. What's causing reasonable people to doubt reason? We're going to look at a number of issues, including climate change. We'll probably start with that. Also, fluoridation and whether or not Ebola can be spread through the air. Genetically modified foods and other issues, whether or not the world is flat. We may even include that in our conversation. Joel Achenbach is our guest. Joel writes on science and politics for the Post's national desk. He's been a staff writer for the Washington Post since 1990. And started the newsroom's first online column, Rough Draft. He started Washington Post's first blog in 2005 and has contributed to National Geographic since 1998. He writes on all kinds of topics, dinosaurs, particle physics, earthquakes, extraterrestrial life, and many other topics. And he has taught journalism at Princeton and Georgetown University and has written a number of books, including A Hole at the Bottom of the Sea. And Joel, thank you very much for joining us. Hi.
Thank you for having me. I sound kind of scattered, don't I? I sound like I'm all over the place with that resume you just read.
You just sound like an excellent journalist, right, Joel?
Well, it's a good job. It's a fun job. I recommend it to anyone who has a curiosity about the world.
Yeah, I'm with you. Absolutely. Let's start with climate change. We focused on climate change on many, many programs here on this particular show. You write in the article, you know, last fall we had this intergovernmental panel on climate change, hundreds of scientists releasing their fifth report in the past 25 years. Very strong statement. The consensus that we have an issue here, that the planet has warmed, that we are to blame, the dominant cause of warming. And yet, you're right, many still believe that climate activists are using the threat of global warming to attack the free market and industrial society generally. And as a result, we don't have the kind of movement that we may need to have. It really is phenomenal.
This issue has gotten caught up in the culture wars. It's become totally political. And it was not always that way. Cast your mind back to the 1990s. Yes, there's always been debate about global warming, climate change. It was not as sharply partisan, though. It was not so ideologically fraught, because well into this century, even if you were, you know, an official in the George W. Bush administration, you could say, yes, well, you know, there's clearly, you know, some global warming going on, and the fact that we're dumping a lot of CO2 in the atmosphere is likely a factor. Over time, that for various reasons, you know, partly due to partisan media or ideologically driven media, certain outlets or radio hosts or TV channels really use this as a way of creating kind of a political wedge between people. There's kind of a divide and conquer the dynamic there. It got caught up into politics, and now you can't talk about it without it someone starting to throw things across the room. Let's just face it, it doesn't feel like a science topic so much as a political topic.
Right.
And obviously there are political elements to this. What do you do about it? That is a political question. How do you respond? What's the best response? And that question does bring in things like values and mm-hmm. questions about economics and how do we value the lives of people two generations from now compared to our lives today? How do you discount that? But the basic science is pretty solid that CO2 is a greenhouse gas.
Well, you also bring in this, and I thought this was a fascinating part of the article. Barber in South Carolina, is he going to have petitions to have the government do something about climate change in his shop? Probably not, because he may not have a shop because his clientele wouldn't agree with him. And then you cite a South Carolina member of Congress who did draw attention to this issue, who lost his job because of drawing attention to this issue, that we want to be within the in-group. We don't want people to not like us. We want to have them share the same values that we do, and vice versa.
It's become tribal. So are you with us or are you against us? And let's not pick on South Carolina. I'm sure it's true in certain zip codes of Wisconsin or in certain neighborhoods of Washington, D.C., where there's only one opinion you're allowed to have. What happens is this becomes a badge of identity. You know, do you like Al Gore or do you not like Al Gore? And that seems to determine how you feel about the climate change issue. And so it's, you know, those of us who are science reporters, science journalists, we try to, you know, get the best available evidence and say, well, this is the most likely scenario. This is what seems to be the best evidence out there. But there are other people who, for whatever reason, they want to take the issue and use it as a battering ram for political causes. And let's not say that only one side ever does this on any issue. I mean, this is kind of, the new research shows this cuts to cultural cognition, how we organize ourselves. Some issues are not controversial in this world still, but climate change got completely caught up in the polarized politics of modern America, and so that has made it difficult to create political consensus on taking action. So far we're now getting several decades into the scientific awareness that this is an issue that we need to do something about, and there's not a lot of political will coming out of Congress certainly to do anything about it because it's so divisive politically.
Mm-hmm. How much is the press to blame for our lack of understanding of all of this? There seems to be this movement, if you've got somebody talking about, a scientist talking about climate change and it's here, you have to have a viewpoint that's given sometimes equal weight, that it's not valid. The same with, you know, Ebola. I saw people on TV that, well, the Ebola virus could become airborne. We're not sure about that, when scientific evidence shows that's probably not the case. The same with fluoridation of water. The same with evolution, for heaven's sake, and you speak strongly about evolution in your article. Is the press to blame for giving points of view that might indeed be very wrong equal time?
I think what you're talking about, which we call false balance, has been a problem over time. Here at the Washington Post, I hope we don't do that. I hope that we don't quote credible experts and then try to balance them with naysayers and contrarians who don't have much credibility behind them. If we do that, I invite your listeners to email us and tell us that we're doing it wrong, because clearly there are some issues in which there aren't two sides to it. So, for example, on, you know, is evolution something that actually happens with life on Earth? I don't consider there being two sides of that issue. There are people who are uncomfortable with evolution for various reasons, but I'm not going to quote them in a story saying the evolution is a hoax or that the Earth is only 6,000 years old. The Earth is not 6,000 years old. That is just, it's not true. The Earth is about 4.6 billion years old, and we have multiple lines of evidence to where we know that. So I don't think the real answer to your question is no, I don't think the press is to blame for this issue, because first of all, the press refers to unfortunately outmoded technology. I work at a newspaper and always have, but the media now is all over the place. The old days where you had just a few gatekeepers of information, you know, Walter Cronkite or, you know, Huntley Brinkley, and, you know, maybe a few big newspapers. And those days are over. People get information all different kinds of ways. You've had the segmentation of the media from with the internet, particularly so.
Right.
It's a whole new information universe. And so I mean, this will drive some people crazy. I wouldn't blame the mainstream media for getting this wrong. I think obviously there are times that we haven't done the best possible job, but I think it's a little more complicated than that.
Mm-hmm. Well, what about, and this was true, certainly the vaccination conversation recently with the outbreak of measles in this country, that there is something in the scientific method that keeps scientists from saying, without a doubt, this is definitively true. There's always this, you know, maybe it's 0.0001% chance that this may not be true, that you have to have something definitive from the scientific community, which is not what the scientific method is all about, in order to lay to rest some of these conspiracy theories.
So scientists are correct in when they cite their own uncertainty. So most science takes place at the edge of what is known and at the edge of the knowable, and there are error bars, there are uncertainties. So with something like climate change, we have scenarios for how warm the planet is going to get with a certain amount of CO2 added to the atmosphere, but there's no absolute certainty of how it's going to play out. So there's estimates, and scientists tend to, by nature, understand that their work is provisional. It's contingent. It's contingent upon the next piece of data to come along. So they tend to hedge their bets. They tend to hedge their language and not speak in terms of absolute truths. This is why science has been effective over 400-something years, is that it is willing to not be dogmatic and to change its mind about certain things. That said, it doesn't mean that people should be nihilistic or assume that no one knows anything, or that, well, it's all just a bunch of guesswork, or why should we take action on climate change when no one really knows how bad it's going to get? You can't go through life waiting to be absolutely certain about things before you take action. If you do, you'll never do anything, because it's you have to go with the best available evidence at that moment and understand that absolute certainties are just that's not how research works. So scientists sometimes, some scientists will be more absolutist and will pound the table and say, I know this to be true, and maybe they get quoted a lot because they're such table pounders. But I think that the best scientists do tend to, you know, hedge their language a little bit, and the rest of us have to then decide, well, what should we do? And politicians shouldn't say, well, I'm not a scientist, I don't really know.
Right.
Take the best evidence and come up with a plan. That's what you got to do.
Joel Achenbach is our guest, and he is the author of the cover story of National Geographic, the current issue, the March issue, actually, which is titled The War on Science. Climate change does not exist. Evolution never happened. The moon landing was fake. Vaccinations can lead to autism, and genetically modified food is evil. Join our on-air conversation at 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. We will be with you momentarily. Is there a war on science? We'll take your phone calls in a moment. This is also the Wisconsin Public Radio Winter Membership Drive. I'm Kathleen Dunn with Lisa Nalbandian, and you know that you're always going to hear something worthwhile and maybe controversial when you tune in to the Kathleen Dunn Show. Today we are asking you to put a value on this program and everything else you hear on WPR by making a gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Last hour, we heard from 36 members. Thank you so much for
those gifts.
And hey, we have a brand new goal this hour, and I think we should just make it. So let me say that, and it's 50 pledges.
Support the station that you love. Help us meet this goal when you give now. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
We all crave substance and insightful information that makes us think about things differently. And you know what? That's why you listen to this program right now. Kathleen and her producers, KP Whaley and Scotty Myers, really do such a phenomenal job presenting important topics.
We do so many different interviews with history. We've done almost every president. We've done an hour on almost every president. We talk about national politics all the time. We talk about science frequently, all kinds of issues that are getting attention but not long attention elsewhere, or maybe no attention at all elsewhere. You get the information here. It's a kind of substance That's only possible with your support. So make your contribution right now. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
The amount of your pledge is completely up to you. And know this, that every pledge matters and every pledge helps pay for the programs that you enjoy and rely on Wisconsin Public Radio. And during the Strive, you can ask for the I Love WPR t-shirt when you give $120 or more.
It's a very nice t-shirt. Mm-hmm. It's dark heather gray, USA made and printed right here in Wisconsin. So you can show your love for WPR and ask for the t-shirt when you give $120 or more. It's $10 a month. And you do all of this at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Your call is important to us, so please leave a message after the beep.
I don't think that people fully understand that Wisconsin Public Radio is really the basis from which it all began. I'm constantly telling people that you've got a tremendous resource here. You don't have to contribute. I mean, you can go ahead and take the service for free. I tell them, I contribute so you can listen. That always gets them. Here's this tremendous amount of information, which is commercial-free. It's annoyance-free, certainly. And I've got this terrible aversion to commercials, both on television and especially radio. I don't think the people really understand the value that you have right here just flipping on the radio.
Pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. I think you know the value you have by turning on the radio. I'm Kathleen Dunn with Lisa Nalbandian. Maybe your gift will be $10 or $20 a month, but whatever you choose is fine.
We're pretty sure that the programs you hear on WPR make a big difference in your life. You're listening right now, and you probably listen every single day. So during this winter membership drive, we're asking you to put your money where your values are.
Each year, listeners who value public radio give what they can to support WPR. If you're already a member, we thank you for making this service possible. If you are not a member, today's the day to become one. Contribute right now. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
Listening to Wisconsin Public Radio makes driving, it makes working, it makes even sitting down in your favorite chair a bit of a different experience. And by different, I mean better, a much better experience.
Yeah, it is. And your support makes WPR possible. It turns those ordinary activities into extraordinary ones. Your life is better with WPR in it. So give now, WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
Giving takes just a few minutes of your time. Here's what we need. Your name, contact information, how much you want to give, and how you'd like to pay. You can pay in one lump sum, or better yet, you can become a monthly sustainer. No matter how you choose to give or how much you give, use the next few minutes right now to support the station you count on at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Say you hear three things a day that you're really glad you heard, and if you paid a dime for each one of those, it would work. I love this. It would work out to $10 a month. Make that contribution right now. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
That's such a great way of saying it, Kathleen. And let me just break down the status. We have about 34 minutes left this hour, and we're still looking for 47 new pledges. So your pledge right now during this winter membership drive is so important.
We're offering something special. You can show off your WPR pride with the I Love WPR t-shirt. It's yours for a pledge of $120, $10 a month at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
If you're not already a sustainer, become one right now. It's easy to set up these like ongoing, convenient monthly donations from your bank account or credit card. And you can do that at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Amanda from Madison, Lisa says, I love WPR so much. It's a wonderful source for all kinds of important information. That says it all.
It sure does. Thank you, Amanda. So follow in Amanda's footsteps at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Thank you, Lisa, and thanks, everybody, for all of your contributions. You know, Pledge for Science, too. We're talking about science this hour, and the author of the cover piece for the March issue of National Geographic, The War on Science. Our guest is Joel Achenbach, who writes about science and politics for The Washington Post and frequently writes for National Geographic. So we're looking at climate change. We're looking at fluoridation of water, which is still controversial in some cities in this country. We're talking about the Ebola virus, GMOs, and more, and doubting sciences and the consequences that we face if we do believe that vaccines cause autism or that climate change is not real. What are the consequences of those thoughts? We're welcoming phone calls. Our lines are jammed. 800-486-8655 is our on-air number. And let's start our calls with Mark from Rockton. Hi, Mark.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I work for the Cornucopia Institute, and our mandate is to look at peer-reviewed published science related to food and farming. And the dimension that hasn't been discussed yet in this conversation, and so I'll talk about food, pharmaceuticals, and genetically engineered seed, is who's paying for the science. And all too often now, we have vested industry interests that's controlling what gets looked at and subsidizing what gets looked at. The percentage of publicly funded research at land-grant universities like the University of Wisconsin has fallen dramatically over the years, and companies like Monsanto and DuPont have come in and filled the gap. And so in Europe, their regulatory system is set up a lot differently. It's more immune to influence by money. They don't have the legions of lobbyists, and they don't have the corporate money funding electoral campaigns. So they operate under the precautionary principle. How many food materials, as an example, have been approved, like sodium saccharin, that's been safe beyond measure by the scientific community to later be found to be seriously deleterious to human health?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
In terms of GMOs,
well, let me stop you there because you're making a little bit of a speech, but you're making some great points, and I appreciate, Mark, that you brought this up. And let me say this is very timely because there was just a story that ran a couple days ago about a scientist at the Harvard Smithsonian Astrophysics Center who, it turns out, has been denying climate change, or being, as some people say, skeptical about climate change, and he was getting a lot of money from the fossil fuel industry, and it has called into question whether, you know, he was this was a pay for play kind of thing. And on the issue of research being funded by Monsanto and private companies, I do think that it is better if that money comes from the public coffers, if we have a publicly funded research, and you don't have to worry that this is all that somehow compromised. I don't think, however, that on the issue of GMOs, we haven't talked about it on this radio show. I have gotten a lot of emails about that issue mm-hmm. as a result of my story, because the scientific mainstream view, and by that I mean the people who run the American Association for the Advancement of Science, AAAS, have come out and said there's no evidence that genetically modified food is unsafe to eat. The other people have disputed that, and the objections to GMOs are not purely on the safety issue of, like, you know, can you consume it? There's also the environmental objection. Is it safe to use these crops in nature, or will you have spillover effects from your modified organisms? And then I think that what the Mark just brought up, there's the issue of who owns the technology. Who is this for? There are economic, political issues about, well, who benefits really from these new technologies? And some people object on those grounds as opposed to the issue of safety and what the science says about safety. So that's a big tangle of issues there. And my article actually only briefly touches on it, but I think that's one where for the in the coming years, we will increasingly have to wrestle with that issue. Not just is it safe, but who pays for it? How do we know what we think we know? Who does it benefit? What are we doing here? Is this a good idea? How do we feel about monocultural agriculture in general? How are we engineering and managing this planet for future generations? Are we doing it in an intelligent way? And these are all complicated questions. I do think that we're going to need to rely on credible science and what the best science tells us if we're going to make good decisions about the world that we're making.
Do you share Mark's concern about a cut in publicly funded research? Is it a problem in this country?
I actually don't know the numbers on that, and I know that it depends on what field you're in. So, for example, at NIH, they had a huge boost in funding roughly 13, 14, 15 years ago, and then it flattened out. And so you have a kind of a crisis there of lots and lots of young researchers fighting for a what seems to be a shrinking pool of money, and this has caused a lot of agony in the research community because there's so much competition for those dollars. It creates pressure to show amazing results, and this is alleged to be the source of what is one of the sources of what's called the reproducibility problem, which is that people come up with a result, they publish a paper, ideally in a prestigious journal, and look what we did. We did an experiment. We got this wonderful result from this new molecule, and no one else can do the same experiment and come up with the same result. They can't reproduce the experiment, so you don't know if it's really real or not. Is it a real effect, or somehow does someone have their thumb on the scale to produce the golly gee whiz finding, because that's how you get funding and grants and prestige and, right, and tenure.
Let's touch on, before we go back to phone calls, fluoridation. I didn't know the city of Portland doesn't fluoridate water. This is, as far as I can understand, started as, you know, this was a communist plot by the John Birch Society many years ago. But you write, a century after Dr. Strangelove, the movie, that fluoridation continues to incite fear and paranoia. And Portland blocked a plan as recently as 2 years ago.
Sure, yeah. It was 50 years ago, roughly, that Dr. Strangelove came out. And you had a comedic scene in which the crazy general is talking about a fluoridation and this plot to sap our precious bodily fluids and all that. But to this day, there are communities where there are anti-fluoridation activists who say we shouldn't be putting chemicals in our water. And to some extent, they're just playing to our fear of science. So one of the issues here is that there's kind of a Frankenstein trope, you know, of the mad scientist and, you know, what's coming out of the laboratory, and can you trust this new thing, nanotechnology, or you go back to actually look at nuclear power. I mean, and with its promise and frightening powers to destroy entire cities or to leak radiation and poison people. People are distrustful sometimes of what scientists are cooking up, and so it's not difficult to feed that fear and to say, hey, do you really want to put chemicals in your drinking water? And in fact, fluoride is a naturally occurring mineral that in the very light quantities used in drinking water is widely considered to be a good thing for public health. It improves people's teeth. I mean, people have better teeth in general if there's fluoride in the drinking water. But, it's chemicals, right? So run for your life.
We welcome more phone calls for our guest, and we'll take them in a moment. He's the author of the cover story, which is on the shelf right now, National Geographic March issue, The War on Science. Skepticism about science is on the rise, and polarization is the order of the day. What's causing reasonable people to doubt reason? The Age of Disbelief is the title of the article. Our on-air phone number is 800-486-8655, and we will welcome more of your phone calls in a moment here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Kathleen Dunn with Lisa Nalbandian, and this is also our winter membership drive. Did you know that listeners provide the single largest source of funding here at WPR? And this drive is your chance to support all the programs you enjoy. Give now, WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
We are well into this hour, and we need 38 more pledges. Make your pledge right now. Show your support for this topic, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and all the programs you enjoy at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
On this radio station, the Ideas Network of WPR, you hear so many substantial topics, and you want more than just a headline, and we go in depth like nobody else does on the issues that matter to you. Make your donation for these kinds of discussions. The War on Science, an important conversation. Make your donation in support of these kinds of conversations at 888-202-2552 or WPR.org.
During this membership drive, you can get the I Love WPR t-shirt when you give $120, which it breaks down to like $10 a month or more. Your donation supports the programs that you count on. And then you can also get this hip and really soft and comfortable t-shirt.
And we'll tell you about it. It's a dark heather gray. It has a red heart, 100% cotton, USA made, even printed here in Wisconsin. So you can show your love for WPR. Pledge now. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
WPR has been around for nearly 100
Amazing.
Years. I know. And I think we're still here because we're pretty committed to quality, and that quality is possible thanks to you. Listener donations make up the single largest piece of our budget.
Your contribution makes this program possible and so many others as well. You are part of the quality that you hear every day on WPR. When you donate at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Public radio has enriched my life in so many ways. When I was a new mother back in the 1990s, and I became hooked on Wisconsin Public Radio. I've been an avid listener, and each day of my life is enriched because of the depth of the topics offered, the balanced dialogue that the host and the guest both offer. The Ideas Network makes me a better mother and a better citizen, and I'm so thankful for it.
You've probably heard the news about the proposed cuts to state funding of Wisconsin public broadcasting. The state's investment has brought a wide range of public broadcasting services to this state, like preparing children for school, resources for K through 12 education, and the ability to broadcast throughout the state.
Meanwhile, listener support, your support, keeps WPR programming really strong. So thank you for your financial support right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Again, it's WPR.org, 888-202-2552. Your gift of $10 or $15 a month, whatever amount you choose, we thank you for it.
WPR listeners love to read. I think we all know this. And you have probably gotten so many book ideas from this show and all the Ideas Network shows.
You sure have. We do a lot of reading, and WPR listening leads to a never-ending book list. Your donation right now makes that kind of endless enjoyment and discovery and keeping alive books possible. Give at WPR.org, 888-202-2552 to keep all of those book recommendations coming.
A really wonderful way to support Wisconsin Public Radio during this drive is by becoming a sustaining member. And what that means is that you'll make ongoing monthly donations right from your bank account or credit card.
Many people give $10 or $15 a month, but you choose whatever amount is right for you. Become a sustainer right now at WPR.org or 888, that's 888-202-2552.
We're in this winter membership drive, so we can ask you to make a contribution. And we also ask that we make that whatever you give is the right amount for you. Some give $5 a month. Some give $100 or more a month.
Whatever the amount, we'll use it to support the programs you enjoy. We'll use it wisely, we promise, keeping your source for information and entertainment going strong. So give now whatever amount is comfortable for you. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
We're still looking for about 37 more pledges in the next 27 more minutes to get them. So your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 really helps.
And this pledge drive, we're offering something special. You can show your support for WPR with a new I Love WPR t-shirt. It's yours for a pledge of $120, $10 a month at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
If you're a sustaining member, thank you so much. Make today the day you increase your support of Wisconsin Public Radio, say by maybe $5 a month or whatever amount you choose at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Maria from Delavan says, WPR is the first thing I listen to in the morning. I love the variety of programs. I'm originally from Switzerland and enjoy the multicultural aspects of your programs. Thank you, Maria.
That's so wonderful. So follow Maria's lead. Make your pledge right now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks so much. Thanks, Lisa. Joel Achenbach is our guest this hour, writes on science and politics for the Washington Post, and we're talking about National Geographic's cover story for the March issue, hot off the press, The War on Science, and welcoming phone calls on air for him. And let's go to Luke next in La Crosse. Hi, Luke.
How you doing?
All right. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for taking my call. I'm really enjoying this discussion. My question is, I've recently watched a debate between Bill Nye, the science guy, and Ken Ham, who touts himself as being the expert on Genesis and the Bible. And I found throughout all the topics they discussed was that regardless of the evidence that Bill Nye put in front of him, he seemed to have a block up and didn't want to accept it. My question is, do you think that the Christian camp is going to have some sort of effect on the progression of this evidence going forward?
Well, let me say that when it comes to things like evolution, there are a variety of views among Christians and other religions. The Vatican has accepted evolution as a fact of life on Earth. The Pope has accepted that. I mean, it depends on who you ask. And I think in the case of Mr. Ham and his museum, I think he has a museum in Kentucky that's a creationism museum. You know, he has his beliefs. He's not going to be persuaded or budged from those beliefs if he views them to be a challenge to his values. And I'm glad you brought this up, because it's important to understand that you don't change people's minds on most of these issues by lobbing facts at them or lobbing data at them or waving a science paper in the air and say, well, what about what it said in the journal Nature last week? People don't tend to be persuaded by that. The way you make progress on this is by building trust and common purpose in figuring out, well, okay, who here do we view as an honest broker of information? And I mentioned the Pope. That's been, you know, many people view him as someone who is trustworthy, sharing their religious values. So if the Pope says, yes, evolution it's okay to believe in evolution and be a Christian, that goes a long way, much farther than if Bill Nye, you know, the science guy, says that evolution is true. So in my article in National Geographic, I talk about the you know, why do people believe what they do. It has to, a lot of it has to do with cultural identity and values, and they don't like it when they sense that someone is making is posing a threat to their values and who they are. They want to listen to someone who they trust, who they think is an honest broker.
Mm-hmm. You also make a point in the article that some of these truths, evolution being one of them, that they seem, when you think about it, that even people who are very, very sophisticated with their scientific knowledge may have to pause for a moment when they are asked, you know, if we're, do you believe that we're related in some way to whales or to mollusks? You know, when you look at evolution, that it just does, it seems so fantastic in a way that even the very sophisticated pause.
Yes, science tells us things that sometimes we don't want to hear, and sometimes that are just counterintuitive. It doesn't look, the Earth does not appear to be spinning. If you walk outside, the Earth is not spinning. It seems to be totally stationary.
Right.
And you can see the sun goes around the Earth clearly. So science tells us, no, you have to discount your anecdotal evidence in favor of truths that are harvested by people you've never met at a distance. And that's counterintuitive and hard to do. Certainly, you know, some of these issues that we deal with all the time, they don't come easily to us. So the caller earlier mentioned genetically modified food. Intuitively, I don't know if that's healthy or not. I mean, if you know, I have to do research on that, and I might have to suppress some of my natural kind of disinclination to think that it's okay. And one of the things that I'll tie up a little loop from earlier in the conversation, Kathleen, you mentioned Ebola a couple of times, and in my article in National Geographic, I bring up this example, which is that. Should we fear that Ebola is going to suddenly mutate and become airborne? And I wrote in the article that the scientific mainstream view was that it was very unlikely to do that. And the reason I wrote that is that in the history of viruses, we've never known one to change in a dramatic way its mode of transmission, i.e. to go from one mode of transmission to being, you know, a respiratory virus. It's just we've never known that to happen. Recently, there was a story that came out based on a couple of researchers who said, well, it could happen. And so we gave that some press. This just came out a few days ago. And I got some emails from people saying, hey, well, you said in the article that it was very unlikely. And these researchers say that it is likely. Well, look closely at this new piece of research. There is not a single example documented of anyone catching Ebola through airborne transmission. Not one. The article essentially says that it could happen, and no one has denied that no one has said there's no way it could happen. If you look at the way that virus spread, Ebola spread, it spread in the known way it always has, which is through direct contact with bodily fluids. It did not appear or behave like an airborne contagion, and there's no evidence that there's anything different about the virus this time around. And so I would ask listeners of this show and people who consume the news media, this is just a basic rule, never put too much stock in any one story or any one report or any one quotation from a scientist. I don't care how many degrees he or she has, that you have to not just keep an open mind, but accept that knowledge is kind of provisional and contingent upon the next piece of data to come along. And yes, there are always anomalies, and there are people who are outliers. There's always an expert somewhere who will say anything.
We'll take one more call, and let's go to John in Milwaukee. Hi, John.
Hi, how are you doing today?
All right, John, how are you?
I'm doing really well. Yeah, I was just calling. I actually read the article over my lunch break today. And I thought it was really interesting how you seem to personify what you call science. Would you be willing to comment on that at all?
I'm not really sure what you mean by that.
Well, you say science says that global warming, or you said climate change is a fact, right? And that scientists say that, but science is as a body says that, as a consensus says that.
Well, I think there is a consensus that climate change is going on, that we're putting CO2 in the atmosphere. CO2 is a greenhouse gas, and that the consensus is that we're contributing to the warming. I'm not a scientist. I'm a newspaper reporter. I've always been a newspaper reporter. I spent 8 years at the Miami Herald and 25 at the Washington Post, and I am up front with everyone that when I go into one of these stories, I go to the experts and the people who I think are credible, and I say, tell me what you know and how you know it. What are your doubts? And I get a range of opinions. You know, I went to a creationism museum for the reporting of this story, one outside of San Diego, and found it to be a really interesting experience. I didn't use that in the story, but it was helpful and informative to me to see how the museum used scientific language to argue that the Earth is only 6,000 years old. I try to get a wide variety of information, I mean, you know, different sources before putting together a story like this, particularly one that's this innately controversial. I mean, it's this sort of one-stop shopping for all your controversy needs.
And so it makes it a good read as well, written by a good reporter. Joel, thank you very much for being with us.
I really enjoyed it, Kathleen. Thanks. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, our pleasure. Joel Achenbach. And what he wrote is the cover story of the March issue of National Geographic, The War on Science. This is also the Wisconsin Public Radio Winter Membership Drive. I'm Kathleen Dunn with Lisa Nalbandian. And thank you to everyone who's a sustainer or who's already contributed during this drive or by mail. Thank you. We rely on listeners like you, and your support is the largest single piece of the budget. If you haven't given yet, now's the time. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We're looking for 25 more pledges. That's what I'd like to see before we wrap up the hour. Make your gift to support the WPR programs you enjoy and rely on every single day. Now is the time to make your pledge at WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
I know you love science topics, and we try to do a good measure of them during our hours on the air, that you enjoyed the conversation with Joel, a great science reporter, on the war on science. The hour is indicative of the kinds of informative conversations that we have on this show every day.
Now take a few minutes to make this show and many more shows possible. Choose a gift amount that works for you, makes sense for your budget. Then make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We do have an added incentive. We have something special during this winter membership drive. It's an I Love WPR t-shirt, and it's yours when you give $120 or more, which, as you know, is $10 a month.
The t-shirt, it's dark gray, it's USA made, and it's even printed right here in Wisconsin. Ask for your t-shirt now and show your support for WPR when you make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Well, I figured it was important for me to become a sustaining member because I needed to give back. I really enjoy the programs here. I get to hear it every day, and I figure there's buy-in. When I'm a sustainer, I enjoy driving to work, leaving work, being at home, even going to bed listening to WPR. Most media that you hear now, most programs don't have that objectivity that WPR offers. I enjoy all the shows, and I figure you gotta let your money talk. I'm Eben from Appleton, Wisconsin. I encourage you to join me in sustaining Wisconsin Public Radio.
Thank you so much. And you may have heard Wisconsin is having a debate about the level of funding for Wisconsin public broadcasting. It could lead to a significant decrease in state support. That funding has been essential to delivering programs like this one throughout the state.
Wisconsin Public Broadcasting is working hard to address this challenge as the budget process goes forward. And listener support continues to be a vital part of the WPR budget. Your donation is more important than ever at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Make your donation in support of all of these programs that you count on. WPR.org, 888-202-2552. Your pledge might be $5 a month. It could be $100 a month. We do appreciate, and we really do count on your gift.
You might pay $100 a month for your cable service or smartphone. You're willing to do that because you get entertainment and information all month long.
You get those same things on this station. In fact, the quality of what you get from WPR is really unmatched. So become a sustaining member with a 9XM leadership gift of $100 a month or more at WPR.org, 888-202-2552, and keep this station strong.
WPR is such a powerful resource, and we've all created it together. The programs on this station have an impact all over the state and so far beyond, too.
When you're making your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, you're really participating in something amazing. So give now and be a part of what makes WPR great.
We're looking for 24 more pledges in the next 2 minutes or so. So your pledge right now during this winter membership drive is so important.
Yeah, it sure is. You look for things that make your life more meaningful. Wisconsin Public Radio, quite frankly, is one of those things. So now is the time to give. As Lisa said, 24 more pledges in the next few minutes through the news. And we thank you so much for those. How do we pledge again, Lisa?
All right, WPR.org. Or call 888-202-2552. It'll just take a couple minutes of your time.
Yeah, thank you ever so much, Lisa Nalbandian. And thanks to Scotty Myers for producing this hour. Thanks to Katie Madsen Cyrus. Thank you. And thanks for all of your pledges, everybody. We'll be with you tomorrow. Very important article getting all kinds of attention in the Atlantic. What ISIS really means and how to stop it will be our first hour conversation tomorrow. I hope you'll listen.